on today's Run to the Top podcast.
That was my 15th marathon, so I think I've got, you know, a handful of wisdom up my sleeve that I can rely on when it comes to race strategy, and just played it out to my strengths and abilities. And I knew I wasn't going to be the fastest on a good day, but on a day that we had, which was bad for most, that was my good day.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome, this is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. On today's podcast, we'll be talking with Krista Duchesne, the 41-year-old Canadian who came in third in this year's Boston Marathon. It's challenge enough just to qualify for Boston, but to come in third? We'll be asking Krista some of our listeners' questions as part of the interview, so stay tuned for details on how Krista made the podium at Boston and how this 41-year-old woman with a best marathon time of 2:28:32 is Canada's second fastest marathoner of all time. First, a quick mention about upcoming training through Runners Connect. Coming in June, live webinars about training for your big race this fall. Runners Connect is here to help make sure you know exactly how to prepare for your best performance. And please join us Friday, June 15th or Saturday, June 16th or both, as we host a series of in-depth webinars to help you train smarter and answer your training questions. We're conducting these free live webinars on multiple days and various times so we can fit into your schedule. To see available times, just head to runnersconnect.net/webinars and you can sign up for the date, time, and race distance of your choice. That's runnersconnect.net/webinars and sign up for the date, time, and race distance of your choice. Hello, Krista Duchesne, and welcome to Run to the Top.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Thank you so much for being here. I know you have been inundated with interviews, and I really appreciate your taking time for us today. I was going through your website and press articles about you to learn a bit more about you, and was honestly kind of overwhelmed by all of it. Taking place at Boston in 2018 is a huge accomplishment, yet what stood out for me as I read about you and all of the different things that have been written about you is how you juggle it all. Your running and training is just one part of a very full life. I picked out a quote from your website that seemed to sum you up and would like you to introduce yourself through these words from Eric Liddell. Here we go. I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. Krista Duchesne, with these starting words, tell us briefly about the rest of who you are before we get to Boston, because we're definitely going to want to spend a lot of time talking about that.
Well, I think that's definitely the most appropriate quote that you could start with, because my running is about my faith. And I believe that God's given me this ability to run fast and balance the other aspects of life while, you know, giving him the glory when I have a great race, and then turning to him in those dark and trying times when, you know, I've had a poor performance or something else that has maybe gotten me down, injury or whatnot. So yeah, my faith is definitely defining me as who I am first and foremost.
And you are a Canadian, have always lived in Canada, is that right?
Yes.
And you started off where as a child, and then you've moved just a couple of times actually from what I've gleaned from information about you.
So I grew up on a farm in southwestern Ontario, which is maybe about a couple of hours from Detroit for the U.S. listeners. It was Alvinston, Ontario, and I went to Brooke Alvinston Central School. Then I went to the University of Guelph. I moved there where I did my undergraduate in nutrition and played hockey, and then did a year internship in Kingston with my husband, and then moved to Brantford. And I've been here ever since for probably the last 15 or 16 years with my husband, and now we're three children.
So Brantford is home.
Yes, and it's about an hour west of Toronto.
Okay. we did have our four basic questions that we always ask at the beginning of these podcasts, and I've actually answered a couple and you've answered a couple, but you are 41 now. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you were born, would you say that town again?
I grew up Alvinston, Ontario.
Okay. And you now live in Brantford, Ontario also?
Yes. Home of Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, all right. For those of us who know something about hockey. And your favorite race distance or type of race? Now, maybe this is obvious. I'm not sure. I actually am kind of curious to see what that might be.
Oh, I think I definitely say the marathon. And, you know, down the road, I might start getting into some ultras and whatnot. But right now, I still love, you know, racing on the road and, you know, training on the trails. My history with the marathon is that I did my first one 16 years ago in 3 hours and 28 minutes, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed the distance. And then I just kept working away and getting faster with each one, eventually taking an hour off my debut time.
Wow. That's pretty impressive, especially, of course, as we age, we all can use our age as a bit of an excuse. But it seems like you've kind of used it to just push yourself even harder.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Boston. I mean, this is really what is on so many of our listeners' minds and certainly is in the present. I know that at some point, you know, Boston will also be behind you and you'll move on to other great things. But I read your blog about the experience of Boston, both pre-race training, day of race, and afterwards. So what were some of the outstanding aspects of Boston for you, of the whole Boston experience? And let me give you a couple of specific questions that came from one of our listeners. So I just want to make sure you address those. Did you realize you were in third place when you crossed the finish line? And second, what was your race strategy for Boston this year, you know, considering that there was such a huge weather issue?
Well, did I realize I was third? No, definitely not. I only knew that I was likely in the top 10 in the last few kilometers. Uh-huh. And when I crossed the line, Mark, who was the one of the assistants with the Boston John Hancock Elite Program, mm-hmm. I asked him, do you know how I placed? And he said third or fourth. And I said, no, not Masters, overall. And he said, yeah, third or fourth. So, you know, that was definitely surprising for me.
Wow. And, now, is there no way for them to tell you that while you're racing or would it be confusing if people yell out from the sidelines what's going on place-wise with you?
Well, I mean, especially with Boston, the fans being so thick along the whole route and the cheering and screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, usually when you run a marathon, you don't know what place you're in, or any race for that fact, unless you start at the front and you're counting bodies. Now, with the wind and the rain, it was hard to kind of see ahead to know what was happening.
I
know when I started passing those that were supposed to win the race, I knew I was, you know, working my way down from 10th to whatever place it was. But because it happened so fast in the last few kilometers, I really had no idea.
So talk about that, because I'm reading things and I know that the details aren't always right. So please clarify if I've got something wrong. But it sounds like you got to about 30 kilometers in the race and you were in 10th place. And then you were feeling good and things were working for you and you just took off.
Well, yes, I think I was still probably in 10th place at maybe 35 or 37K. I'm not really sure, but
wow.
I was feeling good. And I knew I was like one of the first people behind the lead pack. And I was hoping that at some point, you know, earlier in the race, the lead pack would break and I could join the chase pack. That never happened. So I ran, you know, most of it on my own, which I'm very used to, and that didn't bother me. But it wasn't until two American women, Sarah being one of them, passed me. And I thought, whoa, like, I can go faster than what I'm doing now. So I started to move quicker and I felt good. And then I chased them. And then that's when we started to pass, you know, the women that were supposed to have won the race.
Wow. Oh my gosh. You must have felt so, you know, like exhilarated, because you knew you were going to finish strong. And then to be able to be passing women who you knew were also supposed to be, you know, placers in the thing, that, I mean, it just must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was definitely, surreal in that I felt like I was, you know, the star of a movie, of my own movie, and the lead actress who's just, everything's coming together so perfectly in the end. And I mean, the crowd was wild. The weather was intense with the wind and the rain. And then Yuki, who was winning the men's race, he was coming up alongside us because our women's race was much slower than the men's.
And they started after you, right?
That's right. So then there's the motorcycles and the media truck and the sirens. So it was just like stimulus overload. But I just remember having tunnel vision and looking ahead and just plugging away to get that to that finish line. And I mean, I crossed the line still feeling good. It wasn't until I stopped and started walking and getting into the hotel that I started to, you know, shake and have some hypothermia like most of the other women.
Yeah. Now I want to talk to you about some of this, you know, body percentage issues and all of that kind of stuff, because you talked about that in your blog. But I do want to go more generally here about what was your race strategy on Boston Day because of the weather? That had to be huge for all of the elite runners.
Well, one thing that appealed to me about Boston was that I wasn't going to be a slave to my watch. And my coach, Dave Scott Thomas, you know, he really teaches us to run by feel. So I had that freedom of constantly looking at my watch, which was appropriate for a course where it's, you know, it's not record eligible because it's point to point and it's hilly and all those things. So I was going there to run strong and smart instead of fast. And my plan was to hit the hills. And that's when I was mentally going to say, this is when the race starts. So we actually have a 30K race in Hamilton, Ontario that prepared me for Boston quite well. And the last third of the race is hills. So that was a really good race to include in my preparation for Boston.
Psychologically.
That was my plan. And just to go by how I felt. And when it came to the weather, I knew that it was going to be nasty. And I started to look around the room and think, you know what? A lot of people are not going to like this. I'm from Canada. We have some nasty winters, and we did have a particularly ugly spring with a lot of cold weather and rain. So it was really what I was used to. And I just thought, well, I'm going to make this work to my advantage. And it did.
I was just so impressed with the winners in general. The three of you who came in first, second, and third are, you know, you're not the ones that really were expected to be there, and yet you were there. And I think this part of training in inclement weather, having truly that part of it seems to me that was such a huge part of it, but also maybe this open-mindedness to let things happen and see where it goes, rather than, you know, running on this complete scheduled training plan that started 6 months before.
Right. I mean, I'm 41 and that was my 15th marathon. So I think I've got, you know, a handful of wisdom up my sleeve that I can rely on when it comes to race strategy. And that's exactly what worked for me, that I just played it out to my strengths and abilities. And I knew I wasn't going to be the fastest on a good day, but on a day that we had, which was bad for most, that was my good day.
That's so awesome. And congratulations. What an accomplishment, really. It just must have been amazing. And to not know that you were coming up on third place and still to finish in third place is also really impressive to me, because I'm sure if you had known that you were in third, that would have, it would have changed your mindset a bit. Maybe not the outcome, but it would have changed, you know, how you were running and what you were running for to a more specific kind of a goal.
Maybe. I mean, it's just one of those kind of pleasant surprises. And, you know, it wasn't until about a half an hour after the race, once I had changed it to, you know, dry, warm clothes, that I saw it on Dan's phone. And I actually believed it once I saw it.
Wow. That's so amazing. Now, elite runners have a different kind of setup at the beginning of a race like that. And of course, you have to enter in a different way. So can you talk a little bit about how that works for elite runners?
Yeah, so usually we get an area that we can put our bags and rest until we go for a warm-up, and it's at a church in Hopkinton for Boston. So it's really nice to just kind of, you know, stay away from the crowd just before the race, just to kind of focus and rest, you know, mentally and physically, I guess. So yeah, we just kind of wait around there. And for Boston this year, with it being raining and cold, my key focus was to stay dry. So I kept changing my shoes and socks to keep them, my feet warm and dry. And I did my warm up. So as soon as I came in, I had a little sweat going. So I, you know, peeled everything off so that I wouldn't start damp, because you don't want to be uncomfortable when you start. So the nice thing with Boston is with the women, they did like a real quick roll call. They were really specific about when we had to get ready. And it was so well organized that, you know, we stood there waiting and then we went out, and it wasn't very long until the gun went off. So it was nice to not stand there in the cold weather before we had to go. And then of course, as elites, we have our bottles and gels that are on the tables throughout the course, which we can access as we go, and they're about every 5K.
Now, how many elite women runners were there?
I think with the John Hancock program, there was 20. So we stayed in the hotel and got our food and travel paid for with that program, which is, you know, excellent. And then I think there was maybe another 20 that, you know, had their registration paid for, maybe. I'm not sure about that. And they got, I think they got bottle access as well.
Yeah, so there are a few things that are a little bit different. And I know there was a Nike race several years ago now where a non-elite actually won the race, and she didn't officially win. Do you remember that?
No, I can't say that I do.
No, it's fine. I mean, it was a while back. But you have to be in that elite field, as far as I understand it, to be able to officially win the race that you're in.
You know, I'm not sure on all the different rules for each race. I know that, I mean, you'd have to look it up, but one of the women was awarded the prize money for her time because, of when she started. So yeah, I mean, those are definitely tricky things for the race organizers to set rules, but you know, they can also sometimes be flexible. And I think that's what they did this year with paying that woman the money that she had earned. Yeah. And, yeah.
Good. Mm. Well, the money thing and the elite thing is kind of secondary to how hard you have to work to get to a place like that. So congratulations again. What did you do in your training that got you to the point where you were as well prepared as you were? Because it sounds like you really did have a lot of like mental discipline that went into it, rather than relying on GPS or on pace per mile or any of that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, like I said, I've been marathoning for 16 years, so it's very natural for me. It's, you know, my job, it's what I do every day. So, the experience and wisdom that comes with that is definitely beneficial to me. You know, in terms of mental strategy, you practice that in your workout so that you break it down every 5K instead of being overwhelmed with, you know, oh, I have to run 25K really hard. So those are things that you rely on when you're racing, because you've prepared yourself for in your training runs as well. So
you also changed your nutrition, right? I mean, or at least you cut back on the amount of water for race day, and you upped the amount of carbohydrates, or at least how often you took them. Is that true?
Well, I usually take the same amount of carbohydrates during the race, but when it's, you know, cold and rainy, you don't need to consume the same amount of fluids that you would on a hot and humid day.
Right. So you take some carbohydrates fairly often. Is that in the form of goo? What kind of nutrition are you taking?
I use Endurance Tap gels, which are basically straight maple syrup, and they taste wonderful with a good glucose fructose blend, Canadian company. And then I drink Eload and also use the Fly carb powder. So I basically grab my bottle, my gel's attached to it. I drink the fluid, I toss the bottle, and then I wait a bit and I take the gel. So really about every 2.5 kilometers, I'm consuming something so that it's a slow intake of both hydration and fuel throughout the course of the race.
That seems like a really smart thing. And of course, you test it all ahead of time to make sure it doesn't upset your stomach. But every 2.5 kilometers, for, you know, those of us in the U.S. who don't use kilometers too much, that's like a mile and a half, right? I mean, it's a really short distance that you're doing some kind of nutrition change.
Yeah, that's right. And again, it's something that I've done for years, but every marathon build, I have to, you know, work my way up to consuming the amount that works for me. And it's very individual. So the way I do it might not be the same for someone else, but I think just my diligence in practicing how I'm going to fuel is, again, going to benefit me in the race.
Yeah, indeed. We're going to go to the Canadian Half Marathon Championships in 2014, where you fractured your femur. This was a stress fracture, as I understand. And could you go into a little bit of detail on how that fracture came about, the fact that it happened in a race and you finished that race? In fact, I think you came in third. That had to be both a huge eye-opener because it was a stress fracture, but also, my gosh, what an accomplishment for you to finish.
Yeah, so 2013 was a big year for me. I had personal bests in nearly every distance. And then in 2014, I was training to, I was going to go to the Commonwealth Games, actually. But one of the races that was in my training plan was the Half Marathon Championships in Montreal. And about 5 days before, I had this pain in my leg. And so I went, we weren't sure what it was, and decided to run the race. Mm-hmm. And I was defending my title as champion previously. So doing the race, everything felt fine. But then with about 5 kilometers to go, that leg where I had that little pain felt weak. And then with about 500 meters to go, I couldn't put any weight on it at all. Wow. And I hopped on my other leg, and I was still in first at the time, but ended up getting passed by 2 other Canadians and ended up crossing the line in third, got scooped away to the medical tent, and several hours later found out that the stress fracture had turned to a full fracture that required surgery with a large screw, 2 small screws, and a plate.
Wow. I saw a picture of that, actually. It looked really significant, substantial.
Well, and the video is actually on YouTube, sadly. If people are interested in watching it, Eye of the Tiger is playing in the background. So whenever I hear that song, it takes me back to that 4 years ago.
Now, what did you do to rehab from that, and how long did that take?
Well, I have a good friend who's an orthopedic surgeon and also a running friend of mine. So he was, he crossed every T and dotted every I to make sure that I was doing what I needed to do to get better, which was, you know, for the most part, just rest and not putting any more stress on it. So I had several x-rays just to make sure everything was healing and that the hardware is in place, and to make sure that the femoral head was not affected. So I had the blood flow required for healing. And I did, you know, my pool running, and eventually I just progressed to some elliptical and biking, walking. And then eventually when I had the all clear, I was able to jog, and I started with, you know, 10 seconds jogging and then, you know, 30 seconds walking, something like that. I can't remember, but, a jog turned to a faster jog, to a run, to 1 kilometer at race pace, to 5 kilometers, eventually leading my way up to going over to Rotterdam in 2015, 11 and a half months after I fractured my femur, to get the standard for the 2016 Olympics, running a 2:29.
Oh my gosh. That's motivation and dedication. I mean, that doesn't just happen by thinking about it.
Right. I mean, it's just, again, it comes down to my faith. And I always felt that everything would be okay. And I wasn't sure how my running would end up, but I knew there'd be a good outcome. And, you know, every time I've had some sort of a setback, I go back to words that, you know, the truth about how I just need to do what I need to do to get to the next day. And always being positive and focusing on what I can do as opposed to what I can't. That really helped.
Yeah. You are also a dietitian, a nutritionist. And what did you do in terms of food and nutrition to recover from your femoral stress fracture?
Well, the stress fracture turned into the full femur fracture.
Right,
but
okay.
There was nothing overly complicated about what I did. Again, it's just waiting more than anything and allowing your body to heal completely. So there was nothing outstanding about my diet that I changed.
Oh, really? You just kept it the same and that was okay? Not upping the protein or
I can't remember that.
Anything like that?
No, I don't remember that I did anything like that. to be honest.
Okay. Well, again, I mean, you've just overcome some really amazing things. And I wanted to ask you a couple of things that are different subjects away from Boston, but you are very involved in your church and your kids' school stuff. And again, I'm taking this from what I've read about you. You're also involved in the Kenya Kids Foundation, Start to Finish, another nonprofit, and the Canadian Cancer Society. Is there any particular reason why you chose these charities?
I haven't done a whole lot for Start to Finish yet. I mean, I just have a very full plate, but that's Sylvia Ruger's organization. So maybe someday I'll be able to do a little bit more, but, you know, even bringing awareness to it may help. It's an after school running and reading and nutrition program that she does. So she's our former record holder in the marathon. And the Canadian Cancer Society, you know, sometimes I'll, you know, donate to them or encourage others to do so. Both my parents had cancer and died 2 years apart when I was just a young adult. So that's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
And then the Kenyan Kids Foundation was founded by two friends of mine, Wesley Career, who is a Kenyan, and Tara, his wife, who is from near Waterloo, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're basically giving to the people and helping them to, you know, have a better life, if you will, in terms of, you know, sustainable programs for them, whether it be the dairy farmers or it would be the women who make their kids' uniforms in a shop with sewing machines and material donated by the foundation. So I've been involved with the Canadian chapter of that, and there's also an American one as well. So that's just we share the same faith and just the need and the desire to help others. And when I went to Kenya last year for a month of training, I was able to go to Cherangany, which is where Wesley is from, and see some of the things that the foundation has done. And that was very rewarding.
So I was going to ask you if you did some training in Kenya. I thought I had read that. What was that like for you in the in terms of training, and who did you run with? Was it beneficial? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So last year for my 40th birthday, I guess if we could put it that way, my husband said, yeah, go to Kenya, do some training. It's something that, you know, so many other elite athletes had done, but it's pretty difficult to leave your kids for, you know, at least 3 weeks, which is the amount of time you need to go to get any benefit. So I ended up going for a month and had a really great experience. Training went really well. And just to see the people there and, you know, kind of live a life across the world. It was just phenomenal. And so I actually trained with Manuela Sokol, who's from Belgium, mm-hmm. and she's an Olympian. And we really became really good friends. So we still keep in touch quite regularly. And with Frank, her boyfriend, just an amazing experience. And also there was a good group of Brits that were there. So we enjoyed a lot of our long runs together and workouts and meals and just had a really good time there.
Nice. Do you think that helped your training, or was it same old as far as the training went?
Well, actually, you know, my life has been a whole journey of ups and downs. And so that was kind of an up, and I was in great shape. And, you know, maybe I was going to run another 2:28 or faster. But unfortunately, when I went to London, England to race the marathon in 2017, after all that training, I had my first marathon with stomach issues. So not really sure if the training helped or not. But you know what? It's like every other time I've had a setback, I just continue to focus on the positive and move on.
Totally. Well, you've moved on to some great things. You have three kids, right?
Yes.
How old are they now?
The boys are 12 and 10, and then our daughter is 7.
Oh, okay. So they're old enough that they both understand what their mom is doing, to how much work you're putting into your training, but also so that you can leave them in at least, you know, for a day or so, or in terms of that time in Kenya, they can appreciate what's happening for you rather than just wonder where mom is.
Yeah, they're definitely very supportive. We call ourselves Team Duchesne, and, you know, they certainly have a list of chores that's expected of them around the house. Yeah. And, you know, we work together so that we just help each other out for the common good of what our needs are. And, you know, when I was training for Rio in 2016, they did all of their own laundry and cleaning and helped with cooking because, you know, I wanted to train in the heat and the humidity so that I could be prepared for Rio. And, they were a big factor in my success that summer, as well as my husband, who's, you know, our provider to pay our mortgage and to live. So we got a great vacation out of it that summer when we got to go to Brazil, and all their hard work paid off, and so did mine.
And how did you do?
I was 35th, and I went in there ranked about 50th. So did well.
Yeah, good for you. So as a mother, wife, elite athlete, and working professional, what are some of the daily challenges that you deal with to stay focused and motivated in your running?
Well, you know, I've never had an issue with motivation. I just think, again, that that's kind of something that God has put in me and who I am as a person. I mean, often when I do my speaking engagements, I start out by saying that I've always been energetic. In fact, my mom used to lock me out of the house when I was young and make me run around until I could calm down and come back in. So that's always been a, you know, just kind of a natural thing for me. But, you know, like anything, it's preparing, you know, to know what's coming up next. So if it's going to be a busy week or so, I need to anticipate that I can kind of put some other things on the back burner and get to it later, make sure that I'm taking care of myself for sleep and rest, because if too much is going on, then my body might break down. So it's just always reviewing the calendar and being organized and letting some things go that just don't need to be a priority.
Right. And clearly your family is a huge priority for you, and you managed to fit that in there. I have four kids, so I know what it's like to, you know, to want to be involved in what's going on with kids and to make that happen. And yet also you have other things going on in your life that are also priorities. And I think it's great for kids to realize that they're a part of your success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a team approach here.
Yeah. Well, your parents, as you said, were gone when you were an early adult. And I know that Grammy and Grandpa help out. What's that dynamic like? Are they in the same town as you?
No. So my husband's parents live about 2 hours away, so closer to Detroit and Windsor. You know, I've learned to do things kind of more so on my own or with the help of some people once in a while. And, but, you know, I do certainly call on them when we need them. So they came up for Boston so that my husband and I could go and travel and enjoy the weekend together. So, it was really great to have them here looking after the kids. And actually, they went with us, as well as my sister-in-law, her husband, and two children at the time when I ran my first Boston Marathon in 2005. So when we came back this year, we kind of reminisced about the last time we went to Boston, and that was quite special.
Nice. Well, what do you think has been maybe your biggest running challenge in your life? We're going to be changing gears here in a minute, but I would like to know if there's something that really has been a challenge for you, or something that you've had to struggle with, but that, you know, you say that you have this positive attitude, and clearly you do, and you're also a talented athlete.
Well, you know, I think I wear several different hats: a dietitian, a mom, a runner, public speaker now, and probably being a parent is the most challenging job, just because it's such an important job. And I know my kids are watching me and how I conduct myself, and they're developing their own character. So, I guess my challenges maybe would come there, but my husband and I, you know, we also work together as a team and communicate about how we think it's best to discipline or deal with things and have, you know, conversations about how we're going to parent our children. But, you know, in terms of the running, because I've had my when I broke my leg, and then I've had two small stress fractures, one in each foot, because of running on a rocky road, and I'm not going to return to that road. But, you know, I've just learned with that, and as well as with having babies, three of them, that my body will get back to what it needs to do. And it's about patience and just waiting for that. So, you know, even though that could be seen as a challenge for some, you can also let yourself just relax in that time and enjoy the mental break. Because I think, you know, month after month, even if the physical training is going well, you certainly see athletes that need a mental and emotional break.
Patience is a really good word. And the older we get, I think the more we realize that we still have plenty of time. Time just keeps going by, that's for sure. But you're 41 now, you know, you could still be running at 101. And that's a long time, but no reason not to think that that's a possibility. So giving ourselves the patience to get back on track or to accept that this time is going by and that there are a lot of other things going on in life. And you seem to handle that really well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to be moving into the final kick. But first, we are going to have a word from Runners Connect about an upcoming webinar. You put a lot of time, effort, and passion into your training, and you deserve to maximize each and every mile you run. That's why we're conducting a series of webinars on Friday, June 15th and Saturday, June 16th. In this series of webinars, we're going to discuss the specific physiological demands of your goal race distance. More importantly, we're going to show you a specific progression of workouts designed to target these physiological demands so that you can be optimally prepared on race day. Because we know your schedule can be hectic, our coaching staff has come together to offer you a slew of webinar times as you can attend. Morning, evening, and no matter your time zone, we've got you covered. To see available times, just head to runnersconnect.net/webinars and you can sign up for the date, time, and race distance of your choice. That link again is runnersconnect.net/webinars. WEBINARS. Don't miss out on this free opportunity to learn from our expert team of coaches. Okay, we are back with Krista Duchesne, and we are going to move into the final kick. Krista, are you ready for this?
We'll see.
You've done a few final kicks, so I think you can handle it with your positive attitude.
If I don't have the answer, I'll give you an answer for another popular question that people often want to know things about.
That works. Okay. So in your neck of the woods, what is your favorite local training run? And tell us enough so that if one of our listeners came to visit your town, that they would be able to do that run.
Well, one of my favorite runs, which is what I did this morning, is heading out of town toward Paris, which is a little town outside of Brantford. And I go out there. It's about, I don't know, maybe 12 or 13 K on the roads. And then I get onto the trail and make my way back. We have a really good trail system in Brantford, takes us along the river. So that would be my favorite training run that I do fairly regularly.
And where would it start? Where would they actually park their car or park themselves if they're getting there by public transportation?
Well, I guess it depends on how far they want to go and when and that kind of thing. But they could park along the trails on Hardy Road and head out toward Paris and make their way into the outskirts and then turn onto the trails at Curtis Ave.
And the trails are marked well enough so that people would be able to be both feel pretty safe and also be able to make their own way.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Okay. Well, I don't know how many of our listeners actually are going to get to these places, but it's been very exciting for me to learn about these different kind of runs. And when I do, or if I do happen to be in Brantford, then, you know, I would definitely want to get in a run. And so thanks for that suggestion. Any recommended running book that you've read recently or that just has stuck with you forever and you'd like to share?
Oh, that's interesting because I must say I haven't read a lot of running books, to be honest. You know, when I'm asked about who inspires me, it's not necessarily a runner, but there's two women locally, Sue and Ginger, who many years ago, I saw them going to the gym with infants and toddlers and still nursing. And I looked at them and I thought, you know, we want to have kids too. I want to keep running. Yeah. And if they can make it to the gym with a 6 month at home and a 2.5 year old, so can I. So they haven't written a book that I know of, but that's who's inspired me, you know, in terms of my career.
Yeah. Now, how many miles a week do you actually put in on average when you're in this, I guess it's sort of like maintenance mode right now?
So this week was a down week and I did about 100 kilometers. Mm-hmm. And peaking, I think when I was in Kenya, I did about 2 weeks of 190 kilometers.
Wow. So that's like 120 miles, something like that. That's a lot of miles. Were you tired?
I've been doing this for years. So I build up and prepare for it and, adjust accordingly. So, not necessarily always tired, but sure, there's maybe some runs that I'm a bit tired.
A lot of calories for sure. any quote or humorous statement that you'd like to share with us?
I think that's the quote that we started off with. I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure, by Eric Liddell. But I also like to say to people when I'm speaking, you know, make the ceiling your floor and always look at the glass as being half full. And most recently with my performance in Boston, it's a biblical verse, but basically it was more that I could ever ask for or imagine, in that I think we should, expect the unexpected. And just because it hasn't been done doesn't mean it can't be done. So even at my age of 41, with my injuries and having three kids, you know, you can still get third at the Boston Marathon and become an Olympian, and the sky's the limit.
Yeah. Well, you have such a positive attitude. Thanks for sharing that. We are running out of time. So please do give us contact information and how our audience can reach you.
I'm on Twitter, Krista Duchesne, and Instagram as well.
And your website is great. It's full of lots of information. Are you on Facebook too?
Yes.
Facebook, Instagram, are all of those under Krista Duchesne?
Yes. Yeah. And then my website is KristaDuchesne.com.
And thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. As always, you can follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook or by going to runnersconnect.net/FB for Facebook. And please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published if you are a subscriber. Krista Duchesne, congratulations once again on third place at the Boston Marathon. Good luck to you in your future. I know it's very promising. Thank you for taking time to speak with us today.
Thank you so much.
And most importantly, thank you, our audience, for listening. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head on out to your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great one.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.